Pubcasters. Welcome back to another beautiful episode of the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. I'm sitting across from the Commander-in-Chief of Big Machine Music, Mike Molinar, and his right hand, Alex Heddle. We're going to dive into the 10-year history of Big Machine Music, and they're going to give us some of the lessons they've learned along the way. Mike, why don't you take us back to the early days of Big Machine Music and talk about your vision and what you saw and what attracted you to come in and start working with Scott and his team?
So the conversation started a couple of years prior to when we officially opened, thanks to Allison Jones, who introduced my partner Martha Earls and I to Scott and the BMLG COO Andrew Kautz, and they were starting to consider doing publishing for real. Again, to their credit, you know, they wanted to be in publishing, but they wanted to do it the right way. So they wanted to be where there was a service ad to anybody that they signed, including artists, where they would have their publishing assigned to them. So this was something that was started in the right spirit. So that stayed with us. We continued to stay in touch, and then Allison again found a young songwriter who was graduating out of Belmont in 2010 named Greg Bates, and suggested that we do a joint venture together on him. And Martha and I loved Greg. It was a very natural fit for us and them. We spent about a year developing Greg, and just about maybe a month or two before we intended to surface him and with a full track list that we thought could be his album. He just had it. We pitched one song over to the label, and it made it to Jimmy Harnon, and Jimmy called Greg and got him in. And before we knew it, we were off to the races. If you know Jimmy Harnon, he doesn't sit still either. So he goes immediately when he's passionate about something. So before we knew it, Greg was a signed artist on Republic Nashville. And, what was a theoretical experiment was now working. A few months later, we were at the BMI Awards, which I almost didn't go to that year because I'd just been married about 3 or 4 days before. Should have been on my honeymoon, and we pushed the honeymoon to stay in for the CMA week that week and leave the next weekend, which I'm very glad I did, because I ended up sitting with Andrew and Scott, talked to Scott for a little bit, and then Andrew and I sat together at the table during the BMI Awards and started really getting a bit more in depth about what this might look like. And they saw the same thing that I saw. I was not interested if this was a holding company for a record label where we were just only going to be doing their bidding. I really wanted to do a standalone independent publishing company that was boutique and high touch to songwriters, to very talented songwriters. And then it would just happen to have the advantage of being next to a record label. So, that's the way we went at this. And they were amazing at the start. They really were largely hands-off and there for when I needed support or questions and when we wanted to collectively think about the vision. So certainly from the get-go, it wasn't just my vision. It was, Scott and Andrew and Malcolm Mims and Allison. And it was really amazing to walk into a group of incredibly talented executives that had my back from the get-go.
So, Heddle, you want to join in and share your version of what that vision looked like and how you helped bring that about when you came on board at Big Machine?
I think when I joined, Mike and I had some discussions, but those discussions, in the first couple months, really, really grew. Initially when I first joined, Mike had just brought on Maddie and Tay, which was our first artist development project. And in the first couple of months, we also had our first win was actually a Mike Molinar pitch to Allison Jones across the hall of Drunk Last Night for Eli Young Band. Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was in the first 3 months that I was there. That was in 2013.
Yeah, it was very early, very early.
So in that first year of developing Maddie and Tay and the success of Drunk Last Night, we saw a lot of what we could do within our own label system. And that became real very quickly. Our focus, therefore, we knew that that was going to be a really big part of the story. We had to prove to our partners, you know, be it, you know, Warner Music Group, Universal, Sony, BBR, now BMG. We had to prove that we could super serve them just as well as we could super serve our own label partners. So in that spirit, you know, we wanted to bring in songwriters that we felt like could be competitive across the board, not just really targeting the roster of Big Machine Label Group, but really could service, you know, the Blake Sheltons, the Tim McGraws, the Keith Urbans, the Luke Bryans, Thomas Rhett, those kind of people. And so I think that when we started to look at our cornerstone songwriters, you know, finding guys like Jonathan Singleton, who we almost, you know, in the first couple of months of me being there, we got in touch with and started meeting with and really were able to get a deal done quickly on. Josh Thompson, who I'd known since literally my first day on the job at Astro Music back in 2005, you know, who was coming out of a record deal. Those kind of guys could really write straight towards radio, right? Straight towards the market. And gave us, you know, Jonathan, who was a big name at the time, who'd had hits, and then Josh, who was kind of the up-and-comer songwriter that everybody knew, you know, his time was coming. With those two guys especially, in the, you know, paired with Laura Veltz, who could, you know, bring in another stylistic, you know, piece of catalog and approach, you know, I feel like we were able to attack the industry really early on there. And so, like, you know, building our roster, not only, you know, with Maddie and Tay, which was, you know, not even, you know, 9 months later, a part of what was Dot Records. And then with Laura Veltz and the success of Drunk Last Night, you know, we were able to then, you know, take Jonathan Singleton and have hits like Guy Walks in a Bar, and then eventually, you know, Josh Thompson, Any Old Bar Stool. And some of these hits that started popping up on our labels really started to help, you know, honestly tip, you know, push us over the tipping point, because I think we felt a little bit of resistance early on because we were Big Machine's publishing company and we wanted to be a publishing company for the community.
I do remember those years where you guys really just started crushing. You've had 45 number one singles in a short 10 years, which that's like almost, not quite, almost four hits a year, number ones. That's not including your top tens and your other hits that you've had in there. For any standard of having had multiple small companies, that's just nutty. And I do know that, like, yes, there is a benefit to having label partners, but a lot of those have been, especially in those early years looking at, although I think your very first one, was Justin Moore your first hit as a company, correct?
It's our first number one.
But then, yes, rolling off of that, you started building them out, you know, and you signed this, you were smart enough to sign this new artist writer who's gone on to do amazing things, Luke Combs. Good job on that one, by the way. I tried to sign him and you guys beat me, so yay for you.
Well, we all ended up in the same place, right?
Well, yeah, I get to claim that some, but yeah, that was a good fortitude. But a lot of your activity, just looking at your list, comes from outside songs and really focusing on the writer. And you say that, I think all companies, particularly independents, kind of say the same thing. You know, you want to be boutique because that's what Nashville's known for. You want to, you know, I like your word, high touch. You really want to do, because, you know, competing against the majors, you got to do what they don't do better, right? You got to do everything better on the detail side. But is there something that really has helped you separate yourself from also the other indies out there that you could speak to? Alex or Mike, either one want to pick up that ball?
I'll start to say that, again, a credit to our friends at the Big Machine Label Group, because my first year of starting BMM, I was invited into the weekly, back then we called it the AD meeting, so the artist development meeting. And it was the entire boardroom filled, probably about, you know, 30 people. And we would walk through each of the artists, and either it was a report, an update, a brainstorm. The meeting could go multiple hours sometimes, especially if it was a brainstorm meeting where we were really trying to come up with ideas that could, you know, help us break an artist or really visualize where we need to take things. And what I think watching that and learning from a really incredible high group of executives, and the ideas and seeing the way a label works, because as an independent publisher, even just as a publisher, most people haven't had that label experience. Maybe they've had some interaction, but being on the inside of that thought is really, you know, game changing. You see the things that are priorities, and you see the times that things are jump balls. And I think I hear that there's a lot of, you know, hear a lot of songwriters sitting there at Red Door thinking nefarious things and that go on at record labels, or the reason, you know, theorizing on the reasons of why decisions are made. And it's just completely different. You know, you see a bunch of people who love the music and love their artists and that are trying their very best to get things heard. So learning from that gave us a feel for what all of our friends at the other labels were going through. And I think it helped us learn how to service them better. And that was, I think that's been the biggest change. You know, that's one of the biggest differentiating factors, because we know what they're going through. Everybody has their individual problems and challenges and successes, but I think that's a big difference for us. Mm.
That's great. Seeing behind the curtain really helps you focus on what they need back there. You know, the Wizard of Oz needs stuff as well, right? So you know how to serve it up in a right way. Well, you know, other than like trying to prove yourself out there as a small indie company, what are some other challenges you guys had to face to just be the competitor that you are in this market?
I mean, I think, you know, more than anything is competing on a deal level. I think early on in, you know, our story, and not to name names, but there was a number of artist opportunities that we have that we were simply, you know, priced out of when we were a young company. You know, when you're given a budget, or you're given like, you know, a certain amount of rope, and you have to use it, you know, to honestly spread your bets and then get to work. You know, you can be really right in your gut about something, and a competitor comes around that's, you know, established, has catalog, and a lot of safety in that, and they can make a much larger bet and really grab something that, you know, once again, you would have been right on. And I think that was, you know, the frustration early on. That's changed for us these days. But, you know, I think back, you know, in the early days, that was a big challenge, was convincing people honestly that we would do the work for them, and then that their draw would, you know, they would recoup, you know, they would get to the point where they are having hits, and they, you know, have, you know, an asset that they could then, you know, build wealth on, you know, or build wealth off of, and really just to believe in the common goal. We had to sell about every part except for that big number, you know, that we could install at the beginning of a deal. So.
Yeah, we are, you know, historically, we're never the biggest offer. But we like to say we like to write a lot of royalty checks, not just one big advance check. So, and especially when that advance is your money, is the songwriter's money. So, on the flip side of it too, we always try to adjust to whatever the songwriter needs. You know, we want to make sure if they have a family, we want to make sure their family's taken care of, and that they're not, you know, having to take a second job. If you're here, we want you here. We want you focused on songwriting. We want to be in the same boat. So I think we're attuned to the needs of the songwriter and try to craft a deal around that. But, you know, if someone's just looking to try to go to the highest bidder and they don't understand the difference of service that we are going to bring and the level of commitment that we're going to bring, then they're not our writer. They're not meant for us.
Obviously, things have changed for Big Machine in the last couple of years. You guys have gone through a couple of transitions. I am the king of transitions. I've been through many myself. But, you know, you had a purchase with Scooter Braun and Ithaca to Hybe, and that's going to change some of the dynamics of the company and the focus. So speeding that up, how have you seen this become an advantage to Big Machine at this point in its career?
Well, the great thing is that there's still nobody out there telling us how to do our business. You know, everyone's been incredibly respectful of our relationships with our songwriters, and our day-to-day largely hasn't changed in the terms of, you know, everybody who's already under the roof and what we're due on a daily basis. What's changed now is just we have the means and we have the, you know, the motivation and the charge, frankly, to grow and, you know, to bring what we've done in Nashville to other genres, you know, to service songwriters and artist writers in other genres. And again, you know, the same way we've talked about to all of our other label partners here in Nashville is the same way that we want to be again in other genres and assist wherever we can. So, you know, we're now in this growth mode. We've been able to open BMM West, which is a Big Machine Music on the West Coast. And we've have our first hirings there. We're looking at a number of joint ventures with some great friends who are either, you know, songwriters or songwriter producers or the like. And I think we'll do several of those in the coming years or in the coming months, sorry, not years. And we're really, you know, there's things that pop up in my meetings with Hybe, you know, all the time. And so it's especially when you look at someone like Sarah Davis, who we could do an entire podcast just on her, the opportunities have once you have a song like ABC to EFU and you have the reach of Hybe, but you also have the passion of someone like Alex Heddle, and we have the West Coast executives who each have their reach. It's really magnified what we've been able to do and the opportunities we've been able to bring to our songwriters.
I think to piggyback on what Mike says, thankfully Scott Borchetta sold the company to Music People. That was about, you know, all we could really ask for in that situation. And Music People that were looking to accomplish growth and a bigger vision as well. And so landing obviously with Scooter, and then you know, a couple of years later, really, you know, whatever it was, 21 months later, to Hybe, you know, these are all music people running these companies. And so they understand when business is going in the direction that it should be, and luckily have given us a lot of autonomy. So, you know, with BMM West and the challenges that we're going through this year, and obviously, you know, the crossover hits we've had over the past, you know, 3 to 4 years have helped with our relationship building in other genres. And then once again, as Mike said, ABCDFU being the global number one that it was with Sarah Davis has opened up quite a few doors. The challenge for us and where I think that we are going to succeed is in just carrying our culture, you know, the Big Machine Music culture from Nashville into the other offices. And really that culture at the end of the day is a lot of, you know, very hard work, really giving a crap, you know, for lack of a better term, really caring about the songwriters and their songs and the stories that we're telling, you know, in their careers, and just a belief in a common goal. I really feel like those three pillars, you know, for us is kind of what's always, you know, spurred us forward. And so, you know, with Timmy Hale and Hannah Babbitt out in the LA office, they really see that vision and they really get it. And so I really feel like it's just a matter of time before, you know, bigger things come to that office.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi, executive producer Travis Myatt, producer Brandon Harrington, mixing and editing by Casey Porter, and this has been a Dime Collective production.